You're listening to Carving Space, an Indigenous Radio Doc series.
We are broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, unceded, and current lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. We are really grateful and privileged to be here on these lands, studying at a colonial institution that allows CITR to do the work that we do. Vangwizi, Autumn Chanel Vilji, Chief Jim Cooey, Janet Cooey, Jacqueline Cooey, Vivian Cooey, Shadeji. My name is Autumn Chanel. I am a member of Gwich'in First Nation. I was born and raised in Amaskwachi, Waskayagan, traditional lands of the Cree, Métis, Nakota Sioux, and Soto peoples. I'm really lucky and grateful to be studying here on Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh lands.
My names are Rachel Lau and Lauhole. I'm a Han Chinese settler who was born and raised on the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh First Nations. I'm incredibly privileged and grateful as a settler to be able to live and work on these lands. As coordinators of this doc series, we had the pleasure of working with Indigenous and non-Indigenous students here at the University of British Columbia.
This project is funded by the Equity Enhancement Fund and created in collaboration with the UBC First Nations and Indigenous Studies Program and the Institute for Critical Indigenous Studies.
We produce these docs with the intention of centering Indigenous perspectives on feminism, poetry, student life, and health and wellness.
You might be listening to these docs on Stitcher, iTunes, CITR.ca, or live on CITR 101.9 FM. Docs from the Carving Space series will be released every Monday until May 14th.
For more info on the docs and the series, visit citr.ca.
Well, I think, you know, I think a lot of the times, in many instances, the focus has always been, in a number of different ways, always on the stories of pain and sadness and negativity, right? Canada has just come through a process of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, and yet I don't think a lot of Canadians actually know that the Truth and Reconciliation Commission actually happened and what the recommendations were. So I would recommend kind of to everybody to have a look at the calls to action from the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Be curious about Indigenous people, right? We're not who you necessarily think we are. And have a look at things like positive stories, you know, read online about initiatives that are happening at the community levels or national level that are positive.
That's Dr. Nell Wyman. She runs half marathons, owns an energetic cockapoo, and moved from Toronto to Vancouver at the beginning of 2018. 20 years ago, in 1998, she became Canada's first Indigenous female psychiatrist.
You get tiring always being introduced that way, or are you always proud to be known as such?
Obviously, I'm proud to be a psychiatrist who happens to be Indigenous, and getting introduced that way, I suppose. I've been a psychiatrist now coming up this summer on 20 years, so I'm sort of used to it. But it certainly is. It's a distinction for sure. It's rewarding to be at the vanguard of hopefully change and improvement in Indigenous people's mental health over the years.
Dr. Nell belongs to an important and overlooked group. She is one of many trailblazing First Nations women from across the country whose accomplishments are painfully under-acknowledged. Their names are absent from our history books and curriculums, though that's slowly starting to change. One of the results of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which Dr. Nell was mentioning earlier, is that Indigenous peoples' cultures, contributions, and histories are going to be incorporated into revised curriculums in schools across the nation. It's a step forward, but in the meantime, there remains very few resources available to the public that showcase the accomplishments of First Nations women. The largest document available online is a list that was compiled not by any governmental authority, but by Sally Simpson, a graduate of Wilfrid Laurier University. Simpson's list is now 150 names long and full of remarkable women, like Charlotte Edith Anderson Muneer, who became the first Indigenous female nurse in 1914. She was forced to travel to the United States for her medical studies because the Canadian government's Federal Indian Act prevented First Nations people from accessing higher education. Then there's the Honorable Madam Justice Rose Tudyk Boyko, who was the first Indigenous female Superior High Court judge. Buffy St. Marie, first Indigenous female Oscar winner. Lillian Dick, first Indigenous female neuroscientist. and Sharon and Shirley Firth, the first Indigenous woman to become Olympians, as well as the first Canadian woman overall to compete in 4 consecutive Olympic Games. And that's just to name a few. There are centuries worth of these women's achievements that deserve attention, but this particular documentary is focusing on 3 First Nations women in Vancouver who are currently revolutionizing mental health care for Indigenous communities. I'm Chloe Price, and you're listening to Wellness Reclaimed.
One of the reasons I was drawn to come and work out in British Columbia is because British Columbia, through First Nations Health Authority, is the first Indigenous-led organization or health authority in the country. And so they are really leaders in terms of, you know, directing health and health resources for all BC First Nations. This doesn't exist in other provinces as yet. So that's a great stride forward.
The First Nations Health Authority, or FNHA, was officially founded in 2013. It is, as Dr. Nell said, a groundbreaking initiative that has already made significant change in many of BC's First Nations communities. It's the first health authority for Indigenous people that's run by Indigenous people, employing the first Indigenous female psychiatrist. That's a powerful combination.
The types of programs and services that FNHA supports and works in partnership with communities are much more what we call culturally safe, so that, you know, anybody who is an employee of FNHA undergoes cultural safety training, and as well sort of on a larger, more systemic level. I think it was in 2015, all the health authorities in British Columbia signed the Declaration on Cultural Safety and Cultural Humility. So that means from the, you know, the highest leadership on down, there's a commitment to deliver, you know, more culturally safe, better care for patients and their families and their communities. So, you know, I think sometimes what happens is in the popular media is that, you know, we only do tend to hear kind of a lot of the negative stories that happen, right? But there have been some good stories, and there have been some good threads of stories that, if woven together, point towards improvements. In the province of British Columbia, just because of it happens to have the provincial boundary, which isn't consistent with traditional lands anyway, but for the sake of a start, you know, FNHA is really a leader in the sense of having a vision of, you know, healthy, vibrant, self-determining First Nations children, families, communities, and nations. So by reclaiming our pre-contact strength and wellness and power that was, attempts were made to destroy it through historical experiences like the residential school, 60s coup, where, you know, these policies of the past were an attempt to assimilate us, and yet we're still here, right? We survived, we're resilient, and I think part of what the work of FNHA is doing is by its very existence of being a collaborative agency with authority, health authority, with communities and individuals and nations, is it's changing the way that relationship has been, right? Which has typically been patriarchal and hierarchical. We're going to tell you what's best for your health, versus the FNA's approach, which is come, let's sit down, and you tell me about your health, and you tell me what you think would be good for your health, and we'll look at the resources we have and see what we can kind of create together. It's a completely different way of kind of going about planning for health services. So the short time that I've worked for FNHA, I can see very much that that's sort of top of mind from you know, the top of our leadership at the level of the CEO and senior executive level, all the way down to the frontline service providers.
So I know the Aboriginal Wellness Program, Downtown Eastside, they're trying to implement traditional wellness practices into the standard Western treatments.
Mm-hmm. I'll go back to sort of, you know, the FNHA overarching wish for healthcare and health services to be delivered in a culturally safe way by culturally humble practitioners, right? But for myself, you know, there, I have worked in such models myself, and I have been aware of services existing that do try to offer their clients or their patients the best of both worlds. And so the phrase, again, that I've heard quite a bit since I've been here is two-eyed seeing, okay, where you offer, you know, traditional healing, cultural practices, land-based programmings with a strong cultural, spiritual component, and the person may also have access to the best or the standard of practice of Western medical treatments, right? What you think of the standard medical treatments. Right. And they're not necessarily, this is my view, they're not necessarily integrated in the sense that we don't want, say, for example, traditional healing to ever be kind of assimilated into Western medical practice. Right. We don't want to repeat the harms of yesteryears, but that the patient really has a choice, right? And everybody's different in what they want. Some people have clearly stated, a significant proportion of First Nations people have stated that they want access to those traditional healing cultural practice services. And other Indigenous people, depending on their experience, may not necessarily be that connected to their culture or the practices of the community that they're originally from, for whatever reason, right? Mm-hmm. The harms of the past, residential school, 60 yeah. scoop, etc. And they may want entirely to seek Western medical services. So that doesn't, there's no judgment attached to either of those scenarios, but that, I think what people are calling for more and more is that Indigenous patients or people, because we suffer from many illnesses and conditions disproportionately compared to our general Canadian counterparts, that one of the way to closing the gaps in health status is to offer that approach of two-eyed seeing, of being able to access traditional healing, being able to access, you know, Western medical mm-hmm. care.
In recent years, this concept of two-eyed seeing has been increasingly put into practice in medical settings in Canada, with very encouraging rates of success. To get a first-hand account of this combined care, I spoke to a woman who has been providing it for decades.
My name is Mahara Albrecht. I belong to the Tsleil-Waututh Nation, and my traditional name is Ayelya Tanot, which means good dreaming woman.
Mahara Albra is a counselor and traditional healer, and has been providing mental health care to Indigenous communities for 30 years. Just a heads up, the audio from our conversation has a lot of background noise, but I promise it's worth putting up with. Mahara is a brilliant woman, and her voice absolutely deserves to be heard.
I have seen a lot, I have heard a lot. Just when I think I have heard everything that could have possibly happened to our people in a detrimental sense. I read something new or I hear something new from a client. So I've heard lots and lots of stories about residential school. And I see the immense impact that it had on our people and how it travels down to the children, to the grandchildren. So the primary issues are the same issues that have always existed for our people. Which is a result of colonization and trauma. There's a lot of physical manifestation of trauma in people, autoimmune diseases, all kinds of things. Plus, sometimes they suffered injuries during their addiction days that don't go away. So the healings that I do work on the physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual level. And I'm just working with, or 99% working with First Nations now. And I smudge people, sometimes brush them down with the Eagles fan. Sometimes we smudge together. Yeah, I do whatever is necessary with the person. There's a lot more awareness now than there was about First Nations issues, a lot more. There's a lot more written by First Nations people. I think there's more awareness, but there's a lot more awareness that needs to happen. Yeah. People need to hear those stories. Like, people have often come in to see me over the years and said things like, I want to get rid of my anger, or I want to get rid of my fear, whatever. First of all, I don't think either is possible, but I ask them, well, what is it that you really want? Do you want to be able to manage your anger differently? Do you want to be able to express it differently? Because one elder told me, Phil Lane, he said, our people have been suppressed, and this has caused them to be depressed, and the solution is that they express. So there was suppression, depression, and there needs to be expression. Yeah, and I really think that's true.
Do you feel hopeful about the status of mental health in Indigenous communities?
Well, I think if the government put their money where their mouth is, things would go a lot better. But it's still a very quote government, especially Trudeau, what he's doing with the pipelines, which we strongly oppose. Until they really start doing these things, giving the communities clean water, so it's not like a third world country, it's not going to change. And when people have to fight, like Cindy Blackstock, just to get an equal amount of money and services for First Nations children on reserve as there is off reserve, and the government fights her and spends thousands and thousands of dollars fighting her rather than putting it into the services, to me that's bizarre.
Completely undercuts the spirit of reconciliation that they've been promoting.
Yeah. I'm hopeful in that some things are changing, some things are gradual, but there are some people out there who are doing good things and really doing their best to bring about positive changes, like Leslie.
The woman Mahara is referencing here is Leslie Bonshore. You'll hear from her later.
Can you tell me what mental wellness means to you overall?
Well, one definition that I've heard of it that I quite like is flexibility. It's helping people to learn to be more flexible because they've become rigid because of their trauma in different ways. And that's not healthy. It's not healthy physically or emotionally because we carry a lot of trauma in our bodies and it becomes rigidity. I like that definition of mental health. And also, I do believe, agree with the medicine wheel teachings about it being mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual, that people need to really look at each of those areas of their lives and see how it is and how they could improve it. I think it's all about growth and change, and there's a lot to that. Like, there's the stages of change. People need to be aware of that. They need to be self-compassionate. I think that's one of the most important things for healing, is learning to be empathetic to yourself and to your experience and experiences you had as a child. A lot of people are not. They're very hard on themselves. So I really encourage that in people.
Mm-hmm. Is self-compassion a difficult thing for your patients? Do they take to it well?
Sometimes people will say, well, how do you do that? And I say, isn't it sad that we even have to ask that question? How do I give compassion to myself?
Yeah. Do you ever think about teaching for the next generation?
Yes, it would be nice. Yeah, as I was saying, there just are not enough of us around. And sometimes I really, really wish I could multiply myself somehow. And, I only have so many years left. I'm 67. I don't know if I can accomplish everything I want in this life. I'm never going to stop unless I absolutely have to. I'm only slowing down a bit because it's nice. It's nice to do that. But I would like to do something else major before I die, and I would like to help other people to learn the things that I know. And who knows, maybe that'll be my last the last chapter of my winter years. I'm not sure.
To create the next generation of Indigenous therapists.
I'd love that. I'd love that. I really love that. I really would love there to be more people doing what I've done. I really try to encourage young people whenever I can. You know, if I get a client who says, I'm thinking of going to counseling, into counseling, I say, great, I really encourage you to. And some of the people that I've counseled, both Native and non-Native, have gone into counseling. So I'm really glad. I'm glad about that.
So I'll introduce myself the way I have been taught to introduce myself. So I'm Leslie Bonshore. I'm from the Shiapton First Nation, which is part of the Stolo Nation out in the Fraser Valley. And we are one of 54 Coast Salish Nations in the southwestern BC. And also the Nooksack Indian Tribe, and which is across in the United States, northwestern Washington. And for work, my job here in Vancouver Coastal Health is the executive lead of Aboriginal Health for the whole Vancouver Coastal Health Authority. It's a big job.
Yeah. And how long have you been doing this?
Healthcare. I've been in healthcare for 12 years now.
Yeah.
Vancouver Coastal Health for the last 2.5 years. So okay. Before coming here, I was 10 years with Fraser Health Authority.
Mm-hmm. And that was when you did your Stahelis primary health?
Stahelis, yep. It was actually more focused on mental health. Mm-hmm. Overall, in indigenizing, which is a horrible word, but mental health services in that community.
Leslie played a crucial role in the recent Stahelis Primary Health Care Project, which revolutionized the way that Fraser Health Authority provides care for Indigenous people. The project was centered around establishing a collaborative, interdisciplinary model of providing integrated health services that met the needs of Stahelis community members.
Yeah, you were saying you don't like words like holistic or indigenizing.
Well, because it's just, you know, we're in this place where we're trying to create cultural safety and provide culturally appropriate care in a Western medicine system, right? And so mainstream language even doesn't resonate with our people. So it's trying to find a way where we bridge these two worlds and find a place where the language actually really represents what we're trying to do. And we haven't got there yet. I think we might even end up coming up with a whole new kind of language.
Yeah. Who knows? I was going to ask, are you guys going to propose any like terminology?
Well, I kind of like what you read there with Stahelis. Mm-hmm. And that piece of work was really going back to the language and naming their program Snowyeth, right? And the name Snowyeth means their laws. It's the way they live is what that means. I think in an ideal world, what our elders are asking for and some of the work we're trying to get to, not only in Vancouver Coastal Health, all the regional health authorities, but in particular First Nations Health Authority, is that any kind of service model that we create is grounded and foundational with cultural practices. So the inclusion of elders into our care model, right? So we don't always rely on psychiatry or psychologists to help us find our way. In a lot of cases, and again, I'll go back to the Stahelis model in particular, they operated a supported recovery residential facility called Talmalawit, which means healing house. And it was grounded and foundational on the cultural practices. So being out on the land, understanding place and purpose and your role in your family, and really identifying with your Indigenous roots, like where you come from and who you are. We have a belief in our Indigenous culture that when you are not whole, that's when you start filling yourself with other things to try to find your wholeness. And the belief is, as our elders have told us, when you're not whole, then you're lost and you're wandering and you'll keep trying to find yourself. They call it collecting yourself. So in this particular treatment center, what they did was they helped people to collect themselves and make themselves whole. And so part of that, most of the part that was missing for our Indigenous population, they took a lot of the folks from the downtown east side and brought them to this healing center. This was part of the getting ready for the Olympics. There was a big movement to, you know, clean up the downtown east side because the world was going to be watching. So Tal Malaut was one of the groups that received some funding and some supports to take men in particular from the downtown east side and bring them out there. And I remember going, not only did I support Tal Malaut and their operation, but I'd go to their ceremonies. When they would start, they'd always have initiation, they'd bring folks in, and then they'd have a graduation ceremony when they completed the program, right, and they were ready to go back home. And I'll never forget this one graduation ceremony where it was a non-Indigenous family, actually, which was really surprising because, of course, we were open to anybody. Mm-hmm. But a non-Indigenous family whose son, so the parents came to the graduation, their testimonial of what they saw their son go through in this process. He was extremely successful with the program, and they said they had never seen their son so happy. And the son himself, and I can't remember his name, but I can picture his face when I close my eyes, was him saying no one had ever taken that approach with him before, that mm-hmm. he didn't know who he was, he didn't know where he belonged, didn't know what his role in life was. And that's what really resonated for us. It was like, okay, so this can be applied to non-Indigenous people as well. No matter what, common thing for people is we want to know who we are, who owns us, who takes claim of us. You always want to know who your parents are and your history and where you come from and mm-hmm. your traits and your whole roots. Yeah. And for Indigenous people, we know we're connected to land. So we always want to know where we come from. See, that's common language with Indigenous people. Meet them and you say, so where are you from? That doesn't mean, oh, I'm from, you know, New Westminster. That means I'm from Stolo Nation. Doing this work is about unpacking all of that and trying to diffuse some of that and say to our Indigenous population, you know, come in. And, you know, we've tried to create more cultural safety. Sometimes it's baby steps. It's also teaching and helping the physician or the nurses understand that our Indigenous population may come in once to see you because they need to. It's emergent and it's necessary for them to come. And it depends on that interaction whether they're going to end up coming back. So that first contact and that first impression is really super important. So how do we make sure that that is the best experience possible so that they continue on with their care? It's a huge measure of our success is if they return.
Have you been seeing increased returns like over the years?
Absolutely. Most recently, one of our downtown east side community health centers called Heatley just reopened, newly renovated community health center, and it has taken a complete Indigenous design, Indigenous design concepts, and embedded them into the renovation. So you'll see when you go in there, you'll see colors that represent nature. You'll see a healing space that has, you know, beautiful cedar wall and some, you know, art and the opportunity to do smudging and right. and ceremony right there in the space. In fact, it's welcomed.
That's amazing.
And also that we've included an elder in residence. So that means the elder is actually working with the primary care team. Mm-hmm. There to provide support for the client, but also for the practitioners.
Right.
And through that process, we have this cultural safety and acknowledgement that many of the people passing through our doors, coming in, are going to be Indigenous. It's a large percentage of the population in the downtown east side. And we're already hearing testimonials from these folks saying, it feels so different. Yeah. Leslie, it feels so different, even from the elders who are doing the work in the clinic, that they feel so warmly embraced by the team, that they feel like they're really respected in this dignified way of being part of this lovely team, and highly regarded and respected for what they can contribute to that care.
That's great. That's like a huge step forward.
It's a huge step forward. We really feel as Indigenous people, we're on this rise right now. We really are into our healing journey from colonization and the recognition of government, the recognition of our health authorities and everyone, that they must reconcile, that they must understand what this has meant after the last 500 years.
Mm-hmm. So you feel hopeful about the future?
Absolutely. I've never felt so hopeful as I do today. Yeah, that's 2018, great. I feel like this coming year, mm-hmm. we're really turning a corner.
While Dr. Nell, Mahara Albrecht, and Leslie Bonshore differ in age, belong to different nations, and work in different sectors of mental health, they're united by a few factors. Their outstanding contributions to the field of healthcare, their passion and dedication to improving the lives of Indigenous people, and the positive future that they envision for mental wellness in First Nations communities.
In Vancouver Coastal, I tell you, the most important part for me was the Indigenous women. Indigenous women from the downtown east side.
Right.
I'm a firm believer that Indigenous women are a force, and if we can work with them to support them, mobilize them, they will help us to do the work that needs to happen in order to heal a community.
Do you feel like there's an overall trend of Indigenous women getting involved?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And since I've been here at Vancouver Coastal, I knew that we were going to have this magical table. And so we've mobilized in Vancouver alone. We have the PHSA, Provincial Health Services Agency. Cheryl Ward is an Indigenous woman, so she leads Indigenous health there.
Right.
We've got FNHA, First Nations Health Authority, Vancouver Coastal Region, Health Director Naomi Williams, an Indigenous woman from Cowichan.
Right.
Myself, of course, and a whole bunch of other Aboriginal leaders, Indigenous women leaders in all these different agencies,
mm-hmm.
all throughout Vancouver, but also the city of Vancouver. We've got Ginger Gosnell-Myers, who's a dynamo,
mm-hmm.
So works at the city manager's office. So, you know, I pulled all of these women together, so I'm a facilitator of this, you know, collaborative dialogue that we've been coming together and saying, okay, when else has this ever happened? That there are Indigenous women in these leadership roles that can actually affect change in Vancouver, in how we look at the social determinants of health and the wellness of Indigenous women. So how do we use our platform? How do we use our voice to elevate the voice of the women in the downtown east side? So we created an Indigenous Women's Wellness Day. We've held two of them already. It's called Natsamut, Indigenous Women's Wellness. We started in October 2016. We held it again September 2017, and we'll hold it again this coming fall in 2018. And the purpose of that, the very first one, all of us Indigenous women stood up in front of the 300 women that attended our event and said, please stand on our shoulders. Mm-hmm. This is us. We are self-proclaiming that we are Indigenous women leaders just like you. No matter who we work for, we first relate as women. We first relate as matriarchs, as life givers, Indigenous women. We're in this together. All of us could have been one or two choices away from being exactly where these women are. And so that's a reality for all of us. And how do we use our voice to affect change for them? And so we've done that. We've done that by utilizing that platform to get their engagement, to hear from them, to listen to their stories. And then through those stories, we come back into our systems and tell their story on their behalf and ask for the changes that they've asked for. And so after the first year, like I said, we had 300 women. They had healing services, they had food, they had clothing, they had haircuts and massages and just a day of pampering and feeling seen. That's the main thing we say. We see you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of times they feel unseen,
mm-hmm.
right? And so we're just validating, we see you, we know you're here, we want to hear from you. Use your voice, share it with us, and we'll share it inward on your behalf. And then the next year we go back, we say, okay, so this is what we heard from you, this is what we did with your voice, this is where it's going, this is what's happened. We now have the elders and residents in the downtown Eastside CHCs. We have Indigenous women's specialty care and services. We have intensive case management outreach teams everywhere. We've created all of these opportunities. I'm not saying we're done, but we're just starting, but we're actually seeing their voice being heard in the system.
And they get to see the change that their voice makes.
They start to feel it.
Wellness Reclaimed is an installment in CITR's Indigenous Radio documentary series. This piece was recorded on the unceded territory of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh First Nations. Special thanks to Dr. Cornelia Wyman, Mahara Albrecht, Leslie Bonshore, the Aboriginal Wellness Program, and First Nations Health Authority. The music in this piece is by Steve Coombs, Daniel Birch, and Soft and Furious. Once again, this has been Wellness Reclaimed. I'm Chloe Price, and thank you for listening.
You just heard a documentary from Carving Space, an Indigenous radio doc series.
If you like what you heard, feel free to visit citr.ca for more info.
Or tune in every Monday at 11 a.m. until May 14th for docs in this series. I'm Rachel Lau.
And I'm Autumn Schnell. Thank you for listening.
Dazet.
Masicho.